Lord Vader, Operation Andor is underway.
Excellent. If we release 3 episodes per week, the Lorehounds will never be able to cover every episode. The Imperial forces will crush the rebellion before it begins.
Stand by. We're picking up something on our scanners.
Echo Squadron, reporting in.
Delta Squadron, on your left.
Django Squadron, on your 6.
With Imperial forces coming in fast, we're calling all Rebels to join the fight this season. Starting after the April 22nd premiere, you'll hear 3 full breakdowns for each week's episodes of Andor Season 2. Each podcast will be led by one of our squadron leaders, Alicia, David, and John. We'll be bringing in new and familiar voices to fill out the roster. Search for the Lorehounds on any podcast platform to join us in a galaxy far, far away. And don't forget to check out our season pass for even more content like our Holocron bonus pods. It's good news for anyone, except Darth Vader. Welcome to the Ahsoka Podcast, we're the Lorehounds, your guides to a galaxy far, far away. I'm John.
And I'm David, and this is our coverage of the Star Wars Disney Plus series, Ahsoka, Season 1, Part 7, Dreams and Madness.
In this podcast, we'll be doing a mixed plot and character-based analysis of the episode and answering listener feedback. We've also got another great voicemail from Alicia about a Night Sister named Ventress, who was name-dropped in the episode for the first time in live action.
Very cool. If you've got feedback, you can email us to starwars@thelorehounds.com or head over to our website and either use the contact form or voicemail feature.
You can also chat with us on our Discord server. We've got a special channel all set up for Ahsoka, as well as a general Star Wars channel. We've got a fun and welcoming community. We look forward to chatting with you there. Links for both feedback and the Discord server are in the show notes.
And if it works for you, consider subscribing to our Patreon. For as little as $3 a month, you get early and ad-free access to all of our podcasts, as well as a ton of exclusive benefits.
But if you don't mind ads, you can always find us on all the major podcasting platforms, as well as Spotify and YouTube. We've got a dedicated Star Wars feed set up, so you might be on that now. If you're only interested in Star Wars content, stay subscribed to this feed. Or if you want all the nerdy content in the world, go to the general Lorehounds feed. Just search for the Lorehounds in any of those services.
Also, one last little ask. Can you rate and review us? Those help our visibility. And the more people that can see and listen to our podcast, the better we're able to produce all kinds of different projects that we've got.
Hu Yang was impressed by 20 or more recordings by Anakin.
That's right.
We've got like, what, 150 episodes now? We put Anakin to shame.
Seriously.
This is your general purpose spoiler warning, of course. We're going to be talking about all things Star Wars. You know, we're newer to the deeper lore, but we're eager fans. We're always looking to improve our
there,
knowledge.
Though.
So,
building.
I think we can bring in a lot of stuff now. So, yeah. But if you hear a gap in our knowledge, if you hear something we got wrong, please feel free to write in with that.
John.
Yes, David. Sorry. I thought you were going to continue from there. You faked me out.
Well, I was going to say it's time to whoopa whoopa.
Whoopa whoopa.
It's time to circle up hover turtle shells.
Yeah.
That's what Ezra said to the Naughty. He said whoopa whoopa.
Right, right, right.
I don't know about that.
A lot of good language work in these Star Wars shows, huh?
So what was your overall impression of the episode?
I thought it was great. I think this season keeps ramping up. I'm really looking forward to the finale. I am deeply worried that we are not going to get a satisfying resolution.
Yeah.
However, I'm not going to, you know, cry about it until that happens. Right.
Right.
I mean, I think that it could be. I think somebody brought up like, right, they could have a 90-minute episode for the finale and then we would all be, you know, laughing all the way to the fan service.
It's a Rick Fumaiwa. I don't think I can pronounce his name correctly, but
you did it.
Close enough. And he always brings some fire to his lots of action. I think he's a known, I believe he's known as one of the more action-oriented directors in the Star Wars, you know, TV show world.
Yeah, I think that they have done their work on the character development and the plot setup, and they've earned a big battle episode, right?
Mm-hmm.
You need to earn that. You need to get people invested in the players to satisfyingly pull that off.
And I think they've gotten there. So I hope that there is a very cool battle in space or on this planet. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what Dave Filoni has cooked up with this finale.
Sure.
Do you think there is a season two?
So yeah, we were talking about this on the Discord today, and Cyrus mentioned some possibilities because I asked if anybody knew if there was any hard news about a season two. And Cyrus was like, well, you know, we could have a extra long final episode. We could have a cliffhanger and then fill in gaps with Mandalorian and then the movies. We could get a full-on season two of Ahsoka, or we get an unsatisfying resolution to this, you know, big buildup. And I was like, okay, I'm good with one through three, but number four, I riot.
Yeah. I mean, if they are going to kick it to the movie, fine. I mean, we have moved on in the timeline, we learned in this episode. So they are building to something post Moff Gideon.
Right.
And yeah,
we got a name drop in this episode.
Yeah, it wouldn't be that satisfying if they kicked it, but I wouldn't be mad either. You know?
Right.
Anyway, what did you think of the episode?
Pretty good. I wasn't sure where I landed. I'm enjoying myself this season. I'm having a really great time. I feel like they set a pace. They're keeping to it. They're telling a really nice story. There's a little slop around some of Morgan, you know, Morgan's plot not being known by the council. I mean, Huyang did a full scan. He was with Hera on the planet surface. Why the hell doesn't Mon Mothma have the schematics? I mean, that ship is a uniquely designed ship. It is not just some run-of-the-mill freighter or something. So I just feel like there's a little bit of rough edge there, but you know, whatever. That's
fine. I guess. I mean, what do you want them to do? Say like, well, Huyang had to blast off quick with Ahsoka, so they didn't have a chance to do transfer. I mean,
it was slop. It's just kind of slop.
All right.
But yeah, I was curious too. Do you think that they're let's see. I'm trying to think if they're telling Thrawn's story well enough. I think so. I'm not hearing people complaining about, you know, Thrawn's character. I think people get it and get who he is and why he's such a danger. So I think they're doing a good job there. I'm a little frustrated. Maybe my dissatisfaction was a little bit in my lack of, I don't feel like I've got a clear enough motive for what Baylan is up to. And I would love a little bit more hard evidence. Episode 7.
Yeah.
We got one more to go. And I still have, it's just, he's got vague idea. He's cutting Shin loose. I just needed more, you know, at this stage. And I just don't feel like, so, you know, whatever. I'm picking nits here. Yeah. I think our first spot of really bad CGI was in this episode when Ahsoka tumbles out from the shuttle. And she sort of does this rolling land. Okay. It's horrible. It's really bad. It was really bad.
You care about that kind of thing more than I do. I just noticed it.
It just like it was a noticeable thing. And they are great and it's gorgeous. So
the DH Anakin looked good, but I think it's easier when it's a hologram.
Yeah, because they can do all the sort of superficial surface effects. I think though, even though, you know, I might have a couple of nits on this episode, I'm criticizing from love. This is not hate. And when I was doing my rewatch today, one of the things that I really noticed is that when I slowed down and I was really close because I was on my computer and I could really have, you know, I had a good clean screen and I could see up close and I'm listening with the headphones. The acting, there is so much rich acting that's happening here, but it's operating at a very subtle level. It's little looks on their faces. Sabine being sort of chagrined about not telling the truth or something like that. The emotions are playing there, but they're very subtle. And if you're watching on a big screen or you're waiting for the action or what have you, it's easy to miss. Or when Ahsoka has the reunion with Ezra and Sabine, there's all these looks that get passed. Or when Baylan is thinking about, you know, after Ahsoka gets away, there's all these looks that pass across his face and they can get easily lost in the bigger space battle of it.
He's really good at facial acting. Very good. Really good. I also enjoyed Mon Mothma, you know, with her expressions during the council meeting. That was great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone did a great job in this episode.
So it's really about there's a subtlety that's going on through this entire season.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really where this show is hitting the mark. It's not a intense drama like Andor, of course, which we loved. And it's not, you know, silly gunfighter Mando. It's something of its own. And I think that's really great. And I really am appreciating this new space that they're carving out for us.
Yeah. Yeah. It's something in the middle, but yet something new, which is cool.
Yeah.
Which is what the Jedi Order should be. Anyway.
quick shout out for the director of this episode, Geeta Vansit Patel, I believe is her name. And I just love the fact that, you know, she's got a pretty good career. If you look on her Wikipedia page, she's got a lot of titles under her belt, but it's really great to see them really continuing to broaden out who they're bringing in as directors. This is her only episode this season. I just want to give a big shout out to her because I thought this, you know, there's a lot of great stuff in this episode.
Definitely. Definitely. So. Well, David.
Yes.
You ready to chat about the episode?
Whoopa whoopa.
Whoopa whoopa.
I'm going to stop saying that. I don't like that one.
Keep going. How you doing?
Yeah. How you doing?
Whoopa whoopa.
Yeah. So, you know, when I rewatched the episode today, I was putting the outline together. It was a little, you know, is this a plot driven thing or a character driven thing? We've done a little bit of both on previous episodes. And then this one kind of mashes together a lot of stuff. So I think we've got Hera and the Council, Ahsoka, Huyang and the Purgles, Thrawn and the Night Sisters, Sabine and Ezra, Baylan and Hattie, and then we have the big battle, and there's a bunch of stuff that happens in the big battle. So that's sort of the way I loaded it out. So it's a little bit of character and a little bit of plot.
Makes sense. For you?
Okay.
Makes sense.
Cool. All right. Well, Hera and the Council.
Can I just say?
Yeah.
I can say. It's my podcast. can I just say that they are doing everything possible to make me hate Senator Siono?
Oh, right. Totally.
Everything. Yeah. Everything. Now he's a droidist.
Droidism rears
this guy
its
who
ugly
sucks.
Head.
Guess what? He's also a racist.
Mm-hmm. Yep, they really am not. They're not playing him. They're showing us the dirty side of this guy.
Well, but also we know from the Resistance series that eventually his planet's going to get blown up because of his blind eye, largely because the New Republic failed to deal with his Imperial remnant because it didn't take it seriously.
Yes, and that was something that he specifically says, Imperial remnants, right?
Right.
And he's trying to, you know, look, those are just boogeymen, it's just shadows, you know, it's not really a real threat. And I loved that Carson Teva stood up and he's like, yeah, but what about Mandalore? And Ziono's like, oh, no, that was just a minor blah, blah, blah. And it's like, no, that was really, really serious.
Mm-hmm.
There was some serious stuff going on there. And what they don't realize is that that's all part of the Thrawn axis, right? They were building Thrawn. I loved Mon Mothma's smirk when Hera burns him. She's like,
she did not authorize her mission. Well, she did eventually. That was a great line.
So it was really good stuff. What did you think of 3PO?
I thought he looked fine. I didn't notice anything wrong with him until you were complaining about it on the Discord.
Sorry, it was like an uncanny valley thing for me.
Okay.
With him.
What was wrong about it?
He was leaning, his upper body was leaning too far back.
Okay,
The wiring in his abdomen looked like a person in a, you know, a bodysuit underneath. And then with it, they just had a few handful, you know, wires pulled down, you know, it just looked off. And he felt shorter than he normally does. I don't know. So they were just these little
things. Or maybe Hera's just pretty tall compared to the humans he's normally with.
It was off. Right. And I'm not saying bad. I'm just saying they had to recreate it. And, you know, how many times have I seen 77?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I unknown, but that stuff is burned into my synapses at a very deep level. So if anything's off, like Vader's helmet, if it's got a little too much flare in it, you know, I pick up on that stuff. It's just, I can't avoid it.
Okay. So, fair enough.
But that's just me. It's just Uncanny Valley.
So. Yep.
I was a little worried for Chopper.
Okay.
Because, you know, when he started...
he's always in trouble. That's just who he is.
You're in a court of law. You know, they could fish you out and drag you up and start charging you crimes there.
And yet Teyva is telling him, you know, keep it down.
Chill, yeah.
But Teyva is the one who shouted at Senator Shiono, saying, well, what about Mandalore?
Yeah.
Which was an important line because that tells us that this is after the end of The Mandalorian season 3.
Yeah.
But other than that, just kind of funny. Just kind of funny. He's a little hypocritical, Teyva.
Did you, were you grooving on Mon Mothma being back?
I love Mon Mothma. Yeah.
I mean, it's just such a strange thing to see her in this property. And so full on, not even just a hologram, right. but to right. actually have her fully
there. Right. Right. No, I like that we're getting her in more properties. I mean, we saw her last in, chronologically, we saw her last in Return of the Jedi, right? Mm-hmm.
Was that it? Yeah.
I guess. She's originally an OT character.
Yeah. That I know. So, yeah. We saw
her in- I think it was Return of the Jedi she was in.
And we saw her in Rogue One, so.
Right.
But God, Genevieve O'Reilly's such a good actor. When she's talking to Hera, just the subtleties in her voice and body language. I just really love seeing her, you know, just seeing more of her in general. So
she's the first High Chancellor, right, of the New Republic. We know that.
Mm-hmm.
What happens to her by the sequel trilogy time? Is she already gone? Has she died? Because it's been another 30 years. I don't know. I don't know.
Maybe we'll the Filoni out. Movies will movie will talk about that.
We'll get some Filoni baloney about it.
It will make seeing season 2 of Andor really interesting because we know that she'll make it out of.
I mean, we already knew that, right?
Yeah, we did, obviously. but it's like it's closer now. It's not. It's we've got actual track laid for her after this. So
you sure, know, yeah, she's going to make it into a new political situation. That is good.
But
although I think we knew before this that Mon Mothma was going to be the High Chancellor. I think it's mentioned at some point sure. in the canon.
There's more in, I guess what I'm saying is there's more intimacy now with her yeah, story. Yeah. And so, you know, what's going to happen to her husband? What's going to happen to her daughter? How are they mm-hmm. going to get out of this stuff? So
yeah, we haven't seen any of those. Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, Mon Mothma is a super fascinating character that is, I think, underutilized in the live action stuff, especially in the movies. I mean, she's barely in both of them.
Right.
And I'm glad that Dave Filoni has taken an interest in doing some exposition on her. Mm-hmm. I guess so is Tony Gilroy.
Right. Yeah. I mean, she was just a shadowy figure in, you know, the early movies. We didn't really.
Right.
You know, she was just almost an extra.
Right.
Know, in the, you know, standing over the radar screens and that kind of stuff. So,
yeah, she's in Rebels a bunch. She's in Clone Wars. So she's been around in the animation, but in live action, not so much. Rebels, actually, it's interesting. She's the one who has to say to Ezra, no, we can't help you liberate Lothal. We can't,
oh, that's right.
We yeah. can't devote resources to it. So she shut down the Rebels crew. And now she's like, but why, Senator Shiono, are you being so mean to these people?
Right. And then having to play games with Leia, playing footsie with Leia.
Yeah, Leia, that was a clever way to nod to her and to make it feel like we are in that time period without having to deal with Carrie Fisher's death.
Right, right. I think it was fine. It lets us know where we are and mm-hmm. it lets us know that, yeah, those characters are.
Yeah, because it does feel weird. I think we talked about this when we were going to Cetos of it seems really weird that you would not call the guy who defeated the Empire
right.
to go fight other lightsaber wielding villains
right.
of the Empire. Right. I just don't see a universe where that makes sense. I still think that doesn't make sense. They could have at least thrown me a Luke's dealing with an Imperial remnant in this sector. All right, well, let's not bother him. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fair enough. Was that, speaking of other characters, was that Ackbar sitting next to Xiono?
Was it? I guess I didn't pay close enough attention to now make a verdict. But if you think so, then I'm with you.
I'm not sure. I haven't watched the new Rockstars or, you know, equivalent breakdown video, but I'm sure that information is out there.
Yeah, I think Ackbar is one of the people who started controversy in the sequels, right? Because they killed him. And people were like, why would you kill Admiral Ackbar? He's the best.
Yeah. Cool. All right. So that was our little cold open scene, sort of pre-title mm-hmm. card. And then we get into a whole bunch of stuff with Ahsoka, Hu Yang, and the Purgles. And we've got some different subcategories in here. We've got Ahsoka training with the Holo of Anakin. We've got the whole space mine thing and then hiding in the debris field. So mm-hmm.
I really liked the hollow lessons, I guess. We saw those a little bit in Rebels too. We saw her opening them, and Ezra actually opened one and was watching him, and I think Ahsoka tells her, "That's my master." You know, that was my master. He's a good teacher.
Right.
And speaks fondly of him because this is before she knows for sure he's Darth Vader.
Right. Right.
She finds that out on Malachor when she duels him and she knocks half his faceplate off.
Right.
So, it's interesting that I in my headcanon, the last time she looked at those recordings was before that duel.
Interesting.
And she's only now gotten at peace enough with herself and the memory of Anakin to watch these again.
Right.
You know, Hu Yang says, "I had no idea." Well, right. Why did he have no idea? Because she's never done it before.
Right, right. It'd be interesting to go back and look at the earlier episodes of this season, because when they're training and she's got that little training closet open with all the, practice swords and helmets and all that kind of stuff, I don't remember seeing a wooden box sitting in there. So I wonder if she fished it out from someplace and then now...
That was under the floorboards.
Exactly. And now it's out. And that really is a marker of her, as you say, you know, she's coming to terms with, and we were talking about this on the Discord a little bit today. Can you love Anakin and oppose Vader?
Yeah, I think so.
And be in that, she can think of him as a good master, but yet here's a guy who's, you know, committed genocide. You know, he wiped out a whole Tusken Raider village, you know, women and children, all, you know, not to mention all the other stuff he's done. So there was some good conversation about Vader killing Anakin, or, you know, was Anakin still in there and how was he brought out? So I think it's a really interesting conversation and an interesting thing to think about is, you know, she can love him and really miss him and still be via, you know, very strongly opposed to Darth Vader, who he became, right?
I guess there's also no point in actively opposing Darth Vader now that he's dead, right? Now she can.
Or what Vader stands for and all that stuff. So,
yeah, it's easy to be like, I'm against the Empire. Darth Vader was part of the Empire. He's not a problem anymore. Now I can be at peace with the memory of Anakin. Although, now that I'm thinking about it, Anakin committed his first slaughter of a village before they even met.
Exactly.
Because that was episode 2 before the Clone Wars started. Yep. She becomes his Padawan during the early days of the Clone Wars.
Yeah.
And how does she make her peace with that? Is that part of her legacy? That's still a question for her that I think she's starting to move on from.
And is this something that can you put it to rest, or is it that you need to stay with it for a while and keep working through it and keep working through it?
Yeah, like keep an eye on it, right? There's a great line in one of the Black Company books where Croker, the narrator, says something depressing and he goes, "Self-pity, keep an eye on that," like to himself, right? And I think it's kind of the similar thing here is this anger, keep an eye on that, Ahsoka. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it was heartbreaking to see that moment where she stops and thinks for a minute and says, you know, he was a good master. They really did have a strong bond between the two of them. And it really had an impact on her and him, you know, for them to separate.
Yeah.
It was rough.
Yeah.
So, and I think Rosario Dawson played it beautifully in that moment because there's this little wave of regret, and then there's this little wave of healing and you know, happy memories, and there's, you know, with the pain of Vader and, you know, all that has gone on, it all plays on her face in just a real quick moment. It's just really sublime acting. So
yeah, she's so excellent at Ahsoka. I mean, I don't know who I would have cast as Ahsoka, but she wouldn't be the first person I thought of.
Yeah,
but probably because she's in so many nerdy properties and so good in all those roles that I'm like, how many more can she do? But apparently she could do them all.
Yeah. We got a mention of Grievous, Ventress, and Dooku here.
Nice, nice. Yeah. So I thought, the Holy Trinity.
I thought of you when I heard Grievous's name called out.
I like Grievous. I know people have their beef on this podcast. But I like Grievous. I think he's a fun addition. I think that thinking of him as proto-Vader makes him a lot better, right? Mm-hmm. Is that the Emperor was toying around with this, how do you restore somebody from near death and make them your thrall. Right. And that's this. And you know, I've been thinking a lot about Vader, which is, you know how there's that thing going around, how often do you think about the Roman Empire?
Yeah, I don't understand that one. I never think of the Roman Empire.
yeah, me either too much. I think we might have talked about this on Second Breakfast,
we did.
My whole week is bleeding together.
Okay.
So my Roman Empire is, what if Anakin had not been dismembered?
Okay.
And what if he had been Darth Vader in all his glory?
Okay.
And that's one of my Roman empires. I think I have a few on my nerdy stuff, but and really I think that he would have overthrown the Emperor sooner.
Mm-hmm.
And he might have actually attempted to make the galaxy less evil. I think he was dark to his core when he was Vader, but I think that he still wanted to be light at his core. He just had no other choice. I think he felt trapped as Vader.
Mm-hmm.
I think he felt like he had been forced into a role mm-hmm. that he didn't want. And once he had committed all these horrific acts, he felt like he couldn't escape it. And it was only when his son gave him an out that he took it.
Hmm. That's an interesting theory.
I think I read somewhere, and somebody write in and correct this, Laura. I think I read somewhere that the suit actually made Vader really susceptible to Force lightning, making him very susceptible to the Emperor.
Was that an Emperor? Was that
like an intentional thing?
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, he knows that Anakin is at his core stronger in the Force than him. How does he keep that from overpowering him? Because we know that Palpatine, I am way off course here.
You're way in the zone here. This is
Palpatine
perfect.
Is not a strong adherent to the rule of two. He pretends
right,
to be,
right,
but
right,
he's
right.
not.
Right.
He really wants to live forever. We see that through the cloning and whatnot. And I think really what his goal was to have a permanent rule of two where he stayed and he would, you know, shuffle through apprentices as needed.
Mm-hmm.
So he
has a track record of using people, right?
Right, exactly. Threw Maul away, threw Dooku away, you know, kill him, right? As soon as Dooku is dismembered by Anakin.
Right.
And I think that the suit was, I think the suit, honestly, you know, we talk about that Obi-Wan took the opportunity for a full Vader to exist away from Palpatine.
Yeah.
But he also gave Palpatine the gift of superiority, permanent superiority over Anakin.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Wow, you have been thinking deeply about
this. This is my Roman Empire. I think about this all the time,
which is
stupid, but it's fine.
Whatever. Yeah, you gotta check out, you know, you gotta let your brain sort of seek out its own creativity.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So that's uh-huh. pretty good. That's great. Besides Ahsoka constantly messing with Hu Yang during this whole thing, which mm-hmm. was really great. That was a lot of fun. I'm thinking we should maybe play Alicia's voicemail now, since
sure.
it has to do with Ventress.
Let's Ventress it up.
And let's go. Here we go, Alicia. I haven't listened to this yet, so I'm excited to hear
me
what
either.
She has to say.
Hi, Alicia here. Another strong episode of Ahsoka for me, though they have a lot of ground to cover in the finale. One of the highlights of the episode was absolutely the first live-action mention of my favorite character in all of Star Wars, Asajj Ventress, the bad bitch with the moral compass as gray as her skin tone. You've definitely heard her name dropped by this pod and your Star Wars animation and book friends, and her potential debut in live-action has been hotly debated on the Discord on multiple occasions, but step one, she's been acknowledged by one of the big shows. The character Ventress was originally designed as an antagonist for Episode 2, Attack of the Clones, with the name Juno Eclipse. Thankfully, her name was replaced with the much more badass Asajj Ventress, but sadly, she was also replaced in that movie by Count Dooku. So they ended up slotting her into the 2003 non-canon Clone Wars microseries, which is an awesome introduction because absolutely every character looks cool in that art style, even Jedi Shaggy, the Scooby-Doo character ripoff. But yeah, Ventress is a Night Sister, so appropriate she's name-dropped on this Ahsoka series, but she's had a rough road, even for a Star Wars character. She was taken from Dathomir as a young child to be a slave, and then her master was killed by pirates, and she was taken in by a Jedi, and they became the self-proclaimed protectors of the planet they were stranded on until 10 years later he was also killed by pirates. And then Ventress turned to the dark side in anger, offing local warlords one by one, captured and forced to fight as a gladiator at one point. So when Dooku showed up, the guy who took her role in the prequel trilogy, she was happy to become his student. I won't recap the Clone Wars, but yeah, she goes through a bounty hunting phase, loses her dual red sabers, her allegiances waver, and then Dooku genocides her Night Sister sisters. So she grows out her hair, gets a new yellow lightsaber, and teams up with fallen Jedi Quinlan Vos. And she ends up falling in love and sacrificing herself to save him and turn him away from the dark side. Now, I know John and others often say this did her dirty, and I get it. She unfortunately died before all the live-action shows going on right now are set, but I don't think we need to retcon her Dark Disciple book death to get her in live-action. Vos made sure her body was returned to Dathomir, and it's implied that she at least became a Force ghost like most of the Night Sisters. And you can check out some of my wilder ideas involving, say, cloning and Palpatine on Discord. But, of course, they could just have her turn up in a show and earlier in the timeline if they set one before the or during the Clone Wars. Though the head writer of the animated series Star Wars Resistance, which is set after Ahsoka on the timeline, he said that if the series hadn't been canceled, it was going to feature a lightsaber duel between her and Kylo Ren. But he gave no context on how that would have happened. For now, she's been mentioned in Ahsoka, so win. And Quinlan Vos was also name-dropped in Obi-Wan for his work helping Force-sensitive children escape along the path. I'm going to put on my clown face makeup and pretend this means we'll see their love story in live action soon. She's at least gotten more acknowledgement than Bo-Katan's sister and Obi-Wan's great love, Satine. So I'll take that as a win for now.
Awesome. Thanks, Alicia. John, what do you think that Ventress lore bomb there?
I thought it was great. I also would love to see them retcon her death because, I don't know, I think she was set up for an amazing journey post-Clone Wars when she finally did lean into this gray Force user thing.
Right.
Where she really saved somebody from the dark side. She abandoned her pure dark side ways and she was doing something new. That's interesting to me. And just when her character got the most interesting, they killed her. And that's right. Why I think she's done dirty. Not because you should never kill a character, but because you finally made her peak level of interest to me. And then you took her away right away.
Right. Right. When she started to get some, I don't want to say agency, but like started developing into something more fully.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we get more dimensionality to her and more import and impact on the storyline as opposed to just being a mustachio twirling, you know,
right.
2D villain.
Right.
Yeah. What are these other various ways to use the Force or, you know, mm-hmm. as the Night Sisters use magic, right? Or what is Baylan searching for? What other things exist out in the ways of the Force that aren't codified by Jedi and Sith?
I agree. I think that it would be great to see more about other Force cultures besides the Jedi and the Sith.
For sure. Okay, cool. Well, thanks, Alicia, for that. And let's fingers crossed that they do just straight up retcon her death. I mean, you got to get a name drop first in a live action, right? So once
Dave
you do
Filoni
that,
is not above retconning. So
no,
we've learned that. Let's just do it. Let's just do something cool, Dave.
Yeah.
Come on, you and me.
Do it.
Put your cowboy hat on and let's go rule a cool.
Let's go. Okay, so next we've got whales jumping into mines and then hiding into the debris field. I felt this was very Empire Strikes Back, right?
Yeah.
This just got, you know, big vibes back. But, you know, and you know, I'm on record for really hating on when they, in the animated stuff, when they just shamelessly recycle the sound effects and the plot points and
oh, in the same universe, yes,
yeah, I'm over and over and over again.
Weird hang up on this,
they yes. Because it's just oh god. Anyway, this did not bother me. It felt fine. It was an echo of Empire Strikes Back, but it didn't feel like it was. It felt like it was still its own thing, even though they were kind of playing with the trope.
Yeah, I mean, I think that what made it more unique was Thrawn having a plan about it, right?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
And also, was this where Thrawn learned about her? I think this was about where Thrawn learned about her master, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Which was an amazing, amazing moment where he You could hear that. You know that sound effect on TikTok? Oh, shit. Oh, shit. Oh, shit.
I don't know if I know that one.
Well, anyway, thought to himself, oh, shit. Uh-huh. This is a wild card.
Yeah.
I can't plan for this.
But yet he does. We'll get there.
He does, in the only way he can, right?
Yeah,
he's doing best of the worst options.
Right. But then he knows what the options are. So he can play in for that. He can say, okay, we're going to play basketball now as opposed to playing football, right? Okay, so at least I know the basic rules that this player is going to be operating by. So I have a realm of choices. I think just, again, that's telling the story of Thrawn as this brilliant strategist and tactician. Mm-hmm. He's like, okay, she's this kind of person. This was her master. I now know my strategy. So let's try some different tactics to see what we can get, what kind of results we can get.
So. I think the main point of his plan is hurry up on that loadout, guys. we are running out of time here. We are 100%. On a deadline.
100%.
Yep.
Before we end, the next topic up is Thrawn and the Night Sisters, but I just want to quickly close out a couple things on the debris field here. That's a huge debris field. And it's super dense. So that to me, and I'm applying real world logic here, and I know Star Wars logic doesn't always equate, but that would, the space whale population would have to be so huge and with such a long history as a species for those rings to have that kind of density of whale debris. So it's just a lot.
Yeah. But I think that's right. I mean, I think you have hundreds of thousands of years for these whales flying to this planet. Because otherwise, it doesn't make sense that hyper speed travel has been around so long when they learned it from the whales.
Right.
Right. I think there is a long and storied time here.
Okay. It works. Did you see the little space shrimp flying around outside the window?
No.
Oh, yeah. When her and Hu Yang are sitting there talking. There's little space shrimps. I put a picture on the Discord of
so it. Not the escargot, a different space shrimp.
Yes, different space shrimp.
Okay.
But then lastly, we kind of have to talk about Ahsoka using the Force to call Sabine.
Mm-hmm.
You up? You know, she sort of sends her a little text there.
She's like, kind of. Yeah. She's like, I'm a little bit up because I have a tiny bit of Force sensitivity. Yeah. So. I think that's what people are talking about, right? Is that this proves that at the very least, anyone can receive a Force message and send a Force message.
Okay.
Because she did call back.
Yeah. Yep. And she could see her. So the line was open. So, and I'm just wondering, well, we'll talk about it later when we get to the Sabine and Ezra stuff, because I think there's some more overlaps there. Cool. All right. Well, let's take a quick break. And then when we come back, we can talk about Thrawn and the Night Sisters.
Want to keep your personal number private but still stay connected? With Line 2, you can get a second phone line right on your device with a super simple app and no need for another phone. Whether it's for online shopping, dating, or shielding your main number from spam, Line 2 is an easy way to manage it all. Ready for peace of mind without breaking the bank? Call, text, block, and more for only $9.99. Get started with line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in any app store today. Line 2, your second line simplified.
And we're back. Okay, let's talk about Thrawn and the Night Sisters. Are you feeling very, is this Thrawny? Are we getting the Thrawn vibes? Are they hitting
I'm blue, da boo dee da boo.
Oh, there you go. There's a good song for you to make.
Yeah, there you go. I'm really liking Thrawn. He feels scary. He feels planned. He feels strategic. He feels cold. Exactly how we need Thrawn to be. Helps that we have the same voice actor as Rebels. You know, it's the same performance. It's just live action. And I think he is selling the physicality of Thrawn too. Like you mentioned, subtle face acting. The moment of finding out that she was Anakin's Padawan.
Mm.
Really great subtle moment of Anakin Skywalker's Padawan. But In the way that anyone else would have been like, oh, come on, like he like really show their hand. He's just like, okay, here's my plan. Mm-hmm. He kind of crosses his eyes for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Like the vibe crosses past his eyes, you know, flashes his eyes for a second. And then he goes right back to business and goes right back to what he does. And that was a great character moment, I thought.
I'm going to have to go back and actually watch that scene, actually. I think that's a good
pull. He has a very subtle, like, turn where he's like, you know, we're an audio podcast. But I moved my head quickly. Just watch the scene.
So this is something that I thought about today was how many people actually know that Anakin became Darth Vader? Is that like common knowledge?
Maybe by this time. I don't think people knew at the time of the original trilogy, but I think Luke kind of made that common knowledge.
Okay. I mean, Thrawn would know, I would assume.
Sure.
Or he would have figured it out.
Yeah, I think, I haven't read the Canon Thrawn book, so I can't speak to it literally, but I think based on the fact that he was an admiral in the Clone Wars and then the Imperial era, he would have put it together, like you
said. Right.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting that Morgan talks about the inquisitorial database. So the Inquisitors have a database and they're keeping files on people, but it's like a named thing now, right? It's a, you know, I don't know if they're going to do something with it, but it makes sense. It's just a little nugget.
Yeah.
So this whole question of good use or a waste of resources, some people were debating this thing. On the one hand, he's like, you know, we don't need to, you know, it's fine. We don't need to pursue or, you know, waste resources on the pursuit. And then he sends two squads of night troopers out and a whole bunch of them get whacked. And he's like, I think we're good. You know, that's enough. You know, are they telling the story of Thrawn using his resources well and to good effect? And was that a waste of night troopers?
Mm-hmm.
When they've set up in the universe that, hey, you know, we've got limited resources here.
Well, what's his central strategy right now?
To get out of the galaxy.
As fast as possible. How do you do that before they get there?
Slow them down.
Slow them down.
Yeah.
Right.
Tie them up.
Those troopers were never coming back. They were sent out there
to die.
To make sure that Daddy Thrawn got away.
Right. And if Baylan had not gone off on his own mission, Thrawn even says, well, they may stand a chance.
Mm-hmm.
If all of the forces on the table are there and engaged in the battle, they may actually carry the day. But yeah, I think you're right. I think that's a good call. The Jedi are very good at hiding. He has such cutting takes on
it was
Jedi.
Great. I mean, it's true, but also why are they very good at hiding? Because you made them. So don't use that as an insult, you asshole.
So I froze I did a freeze frame on the schematic of the Chimera of the hold.
Mm-hmm.
There are, well, what they showed us, and who knows if this is accurate, but there are 108 of these coffin-like things being placed aboard the Chimera.
Yeah. It is very coffin-shaped. I noticed that too. I guess we're just going to have to wait and see. Maybe it is a Night Sister thing, a weird Night Sister thing.
Would be great. I mean, is that a Marok kind of? Is that what Marok was about? Was some sort of...
I don't know. He was pretty gaseous.
Yeah. So, you know, are these some sort of Marok-like fighters that are in stasis and they need to be brought back to our galaxy to be awakened and
used? Do you
remember
when everybody thought Marok was Ezra?
Yeah. Do you remember that? It's so long ago.
I thought that was a stupid idea from the beginning, and I'm glad that I stuck to my guns on it.
Yeah, yeah. No, that was
listen to episode one. Listen to episode one, and you will find me saying.
I don't know if you get internet points for that though, just because that's just such a base level assumption that it can't be correct.
And yet, it was everywhere. Right. I'm getting. You know what? I'm taking some.
All right. I think you know people. We just want to make connections, and we're always looking for patterns. I mean, that's what our human brains are really good at.
And that's what Star Wars is all about. A lot of the time, exactly. Everything's cutesy.
Hey, I thought Markley in Foundation, you know,
that's
was...
true. Which one of you is obsessed with Markley? That will ring in my ears forever. It's like an
so
earworm.
Good. I loved it.
Yeah.
I was heard. Somebody heard me.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else about Thrawn or the Night Sisters? Directly?
Not really. Okay. I'm really excited to see where it's going, but I think right now we've got the motivations. We've got his vibe. That's about it.
Right. All right. So let's switch over to Sabine and Ezra. What do you think about... Are we going to get through this whole... season without Sabine paying a little bit of a price for her
decisions. She's going to tell him at the worst moment, or he's just going to find out. He's going to be like, wait, why is Thrawn saying good to see you again or something like that? Yeah. Something like that. Also, I got to say about the scene, really glad that the actor playing Becky from Foundation is getting more work. I think that she did a great job over there. And
what are you talking about, the Howler or something?
Yeah.
Okay. What? About Sabine's force sensitivity, I was thinking that there's something developing there, because if Ahsoka was able to, you know, make a call and it was actually open up the line. But then I was also thinking about this. When Sabine was fighting the nomadic marauder guys, she was using her forearm armor. Oh, what's the name of the forearm armor? I forget. Anyway,
the Beskar. Yeah.
No, well, but the what the piece is called. Yeah, they have a name and I can't remember right now. But so she would take a shot with that, or she would turn her shoulder or something like that. And so a blaster bolt coming at you is really fast. And we always talk about, well, how are Jedi able to use their lightsabers to deflect them, right?
I think we've seen some Mandalorians do that, though. I think we've seen Din do it.
He was doing a lot, though. Well, but he's covered in a lot more armor.
Yeah, yeah. But they're both Beskar. They both can take blaster bolts.
No, well, so I think the point is that there are times when Sabine is actually flinching. She's pulling her arm up and taking the blast in her forearm intentionally.
Yeah.
And when a Jedi does that with the lightsaber, the whole idea was they're anticipating, right? They're feeling the thing coming at them. They're using the force to go, okay, here's this thing coming at me and I got to block it, and I can block it this way.
Yeah.
So what I'm arguing for here is that Sabine's use of the force is growing, and she's actually, and that is demonstrated by the fact that she's actually able to deflect a lot of these shots that are coming at her. So,
All right.
I mean, it's a theory.
I buy it. I mean, we got more confirmation that she's force sensitive this episode with the whole talking.
Yeah, to Ahsoka. Exactly. Couple of things here too. We got a mention of Endor. We got a mention of the dead Emperor. We got a mention of Zeb and Hera, which we know is as a fleet commander. So Zeb got name dropped.
I saw a comment on Reddit that was like, Zeb carrying the CGI budget over in training recruits.
Right. Do you think we'll see him this season?
No.
I don't think so.
I think it's over.
Yeah. I think they're...
What a shame.
I think we're going to see him somewhere else and with some other stuff. I think they're laying track for him, but I don't think we're going to get him here. It would be, they'd have to get back to the other galaxy, and then something else would have to go on. So I don't know.
Too little time to go back to the other galaxy by the end of the season, I think. Right.
And then just to have him show up, you know, Deus Ex Machina style and saying, hey, I'm here. Yeah. Ezra's reaction to Sabine as Ahsoka's apprentice.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. And she did train in front of him with Kanan. So, and then he backtracks. He goes, yeah, well, that makes sense. You were training before. And did you catch the whole mocking the way that the Emperor was dead?
Yes.
So the Emperor is dead. That's what people say.
It was great. Really good line there. Yeah.
Definitely mocking the sequel trilogy a little bit, you know, poking fun at it.
Yeah, totally. Exactly. Let's talk about Baylan and Hattie for a little bit. I'm a little confused. He's cutting her loose. What do you make of that?
He gave her until some kind of point in his journey to see it his way, and then he sent her free once she didn't.
Your ambition drives your direction. My path lies in another.
Yep.
But that's what I didn't get is that he kept saying, well, you're being trained for something bigger, a higher purpose. And I guess he was trying to train her for that.
I think that's what happened here.
And then she's just not, she's too gummed up with wanting to be in the new empire to be, you know, to have.
Right. I think he saw that by the middle of this episode, right? He was just like, all right, you know what? We've done a lot of work together. You keep losing lightsaber fights. You keep just diving in head first and missing the plot. She's missing the plot, right? That's the point is, she misses his main point, and you can't train someone who disagrees with your central philosophy. So he's right on that point. This is a little bit like dumping someone and then leaving them on the side of the highway. But I mean, you're in a different galaxy. Are you kidding?
Right. Well, he says, go join your place in the new empire.
Yeah, that's
fair. Which is what you want.
That's fair.
So,
will she make it back in time? I guess that's the question.
Yeah, she rode off on that howler. So,
on Becky.
Not very good. Yeah, we'll see what her reception is when she gets back. Because if Balin's not with her, you know, is she tainted by Balin or is Thrawn going? Because I don't think Morgan would take her back. They didn't like each other to begin with.
I think Thrawn will take any tool he can get.
Right. And he knows what that tool is and the limitations of that tool, and he'll use it for what it's worth. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He'll send her as an assassin. Fine. Yeah.
And if she gets whacked, it's fine. Right.
Right. Yeah,
he knows. Disposable tool.
She gets no intel. She gets the targets. That's it.
Right. Impatience for victory guarantees defeat. So.
Indubitably.
All right. So let's talk about the big battle. There was a lot to unpack here, even though it was just a big action scene.
Mm-hmm.
We definitely have confirmation that the Na'vi are what they are. That's, you know, who they are. We have Ezra and Sabine and their individual fighting styles. And there's some stuff to be talked about there. There's the Ahsoka Balin duel, and then there's Ezra and Hattie. Some stuff to talk about there. So overall, what did you think of this big set piece?
I thought it worked really well. It tugged all the right emotional beats. I liked how the Na'vi had shells for their shells. That was a lot of fun. I liked how Ezra...
Right, it was really consistent with their physiology and their lifestyle, or however you want to say that.
They are very Harfooty. I think you pointed that out on another episode. And I really liked when Ezra made the one Na'vi close the door with Becky with him.
Right, yeah.
You know, with the Howler with him.
So that Howler's now like BFFs with them. So
yeah, the Howler's listening to Sabine for some reason.
Yeah.
She spent 20 minutes with it.
And it's a total, you know, for a younger audience, that kind of stuff plays.
Yeah, yeah. That's
the
fine.
Slingshot and the little things. It didn't bother me because they used it judiciously and they used it where it made sense. It wasn't
the slingshot,
gratuitous.
That was Ezra's original weapon in Rebels.
Oh, I was wondering why some people mentioned that. I forgot about that. That's right. Yeah.
So I think that was the nod of, all right, well, they're not force sensitive. I don't have any weapons for them. They don't really want to do that much harm anyway. What could I teach them? Yeah, I know how to make a slingshot.
Yeah, he probably was having fun, like, hey, kids, let me show you, and entertaining the children in the idyllic village trope, right? So, very, very Western, sort of harkening back to that old trope of circling the wagons, you know, when the Na'vi all circled up. So I figured that was a very Filoni sort of thing to do, given the circumstances.
His cowboy hat.
Yeah, exactly. I want to talk about Sabine's fighting style here a little bit. This is the first battle where we see her using simultaneously Jedi and Mandalorian fighting techniques.
She didn't really switch like she did in the last, in the last episode, she's fighting the bandits, but she does like, there's a point where you can see it switches. She stops using her Mandalorian gear.
Yeah. Because she's not making any headway with the blasters. And then she goes to the saber and she makes headway. So.
Which is, this is exactly what Kanan told her to do when he originally trained her, is stop trying to fight like a Jedi, fight like you.
Mm.
Use the darksaber, but be you.
Right.
And Ahsoka maybe didn't see that. Maybe Ahsoka was like, I have to teach you the ways of the Jedi. You have to learn that purely before you learn something else. Which there's something to say for that, right? I mean, you know, when you learn a martial art, you're not going to want to mix the martial arts until you know what the distinct ones do.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe
I would
that's
guess it might be
for.
Similar in music, right? If you're going to learn a particular style, learn that style, and then later you can play, you know, you can fusion it if you want.
Right.
You can mix it, but you got to understand what it is at first.
Right. So. The same with anything, learning a language, whatever, put anything in there. You want to learn one discipline first, but I think that
and then
with,
jazz it up.
Yeah. And then, well, maybe not jazz it up if you're already in jazz, then you got to get to a different thing.
Exactly.
Anyway, I think that Sabine finally is feeling more comfortable in her skin as a Mandalorian Jedi.
I mean, she skewers the hell out of that final boss nomad guy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, at the same time, she's doing the what do they call it? Gun Fu or whatever? The fighting with the John Wick style.
Okay.
Where you punch somebody with the gun kind of thing. So it's like hand to hand, close quarters, hand to hand gunfighting.
I've still never seen a John Wick movie. We gotta do that on an old man movie or something.
Ooh, that'd be interesting. I've seen parts and pieces of them. Okay. They're extremely violent to like another level of like it becomes unreal. At this other level. You're so high on the spice. I don't know. Do you ever eat Szechuan peppers, Szechuan style food, and you get high off of the?
It's pretty spicy.
Yeah, and you get to a point where you're beyond pain, and you're just sort of like, ooh, you're floating around.
Yeah,
that's what it's like watching a John Wick movie.
Yeah, maybe for a monthly movie, I'm not going to call it an old man movie, or maybe we'll collaborate on this. What if we did a high violence movie thing?
Interesting.
Where
we did
like Kill Bill. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and all the Clockwork crazy Orange. Violent stuff. Yeah. Mm. I think that'd be a fun month.
Yeah. Interesting. I just wish we had more time to watch more shows and talk about them.
I know. Well, if you're wondering what we're talking about on Second Breakfast every month, our Patreon exclusive podcast, we watch one movie, and that is voted on by our patrons after a selection process between us. So this month we did, what did we do? I forgot already.
The Andromeda Strain. Yeah. 1971. Yeah. Michael Crichton.
Yep. Next month we're doing horror movies for Halloween. So that'll be fun. Anyway, back to Star Wars.
Yeah. So what did you make of Ezra declining the lightsaber?
I thought it was stupid at first. I really did. I thought, I was like, oh, come on.
I kept waiting when they were doing the fight, when they dismounted. I'm like, give him the lightsaber. God damn it.
Right. Just shove it into him.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah, I thought so too. But then once we started seeing his fighting style, I came around to it because it was really cool. It was very unique. And it's interesting because the other person that we know is very good at fighting with the Force without a lightsaber is Ahsoka. She defeated an Inquisitor without a lightsaber.
Mm, right.
So I don't know. Maybe they're drawing a connection there. Maybe they'll bond over that in some way.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. She did give him a big hug when she met him.
Did you... I don't know if you appreciated my joke or not at all, but Ezra the Last Airbender.
Yes, I do like that. That's funny. Are you an Avatar the Last Airbender?
No, I'm not. It
okay,
missed
you
me.
Just I know the style.
Yeah, okay. I just know of the property. It was it came out when I wasn't interested in that kind of stuff for the moment.
And, no, I watched the whole series. It's really good.
Right. Yeah.
Yep.
The Force is my ally. That's all I need. Of course, he does pick up a blaster later on.
Yeah, exactly. That and a few bolts. Yeah. Right.
I was a little disappointed by the Night Troopers. I thought they'd be a little bit more of a formidable force. They just seemed like regular stormtroopers to me.
Yeah. I mean, how many elite warriors do you need, though, before the people going up against you are just... I don't think they were sent there to win. I think he probably sent them...
Maybe it was the reserve...
It was the B team.
Yeah, exactly. Not the best of the best.
Yeah, it was the night shift.
Right.
Yeah, maybe that's what night trooper means.
I did like seeing those low altitude transport in live action. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was cool.
Those sort of, I kind loved of think of those as like helicopters, like we might say of a Huey or an Apache, right?
It's you can just spin your lightsaber like an Inquisitor.
Thankfully, no.
All right. I still think that's one of the dumbest things I ever did in animation, 100%. But it's all right.
It was animation. It was fine.
Yeah.
It works. Okay. So Baylan and Ahsoka and their little duel. What did you, any thoughts about that sequence?
I did like how she ended it, but other than that, it was a little bit, I thought it felt like it interrupted the main thing.
Okay.
For a little bit. For a little bit, I was like, can we get back to Ezra and Sabine?
Mm.
You know?
Mm-hmm. All
what
right.
did you think?
I liked it, and it breaks my damn heart every damn time when we have these great scenes with Ray Stevenson, and I just know that we're not going to get any more. It kills me, because there's this...
No, they're going to use AI. I'm just kidding. Don't do that.
Don't do that. There's this look. There's these looks that they exchange. There's a look that she gives him after they have their first little engagement. And she's like, I got you this time. You know, there was in the first battle, she was like, oof, this dude's hitting hard. I don't know if I got him. But she gave him a look like, no, I got your number now. Even though it's going to be a fight, like, I know you're not going to kill me outright. But then later... He has this look when they're saber to saber. It was just so exquisite. I don't know what other word there is to describe it. Just the energy and the emotion that he has, I just, it kills me. It really, really saddens me.
Yeah, he's doing an amazing job in this series. It is very sad. I mean, I like the character. I kind of want them to recast, and I kind of don't, you know?
Yeah, right. I don't know who's going to...
anybody else who could do it, but I don't want to let go of the character.
Yeah. So she uses two sabers this time, which I thought was interesting. Mm-hmm. And we got her in the training scene with Anakin. She was using two sabers. Mm-hmm. So I think, again, she's more fully embodying who she is. And her style is two saber fighting.
Right, right. Elsa has come down from the Frozen Tower. She's letting it go.
And then just right at the beginning of the duel, there's a little doo-doo-doo-doo, sort of the gunfighter sort of, you know, showdown thing. I thought that was really great. And then there's these great drums in the background building up the tension. So yeah, Filoni was having a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think so.
Reaching into his Western and samurai movie traditions.
Yeah, I mean, it's stuff up. He kind of did that in Mandalorian with that too, with that kind of sound effect. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad that that's carrying over into other... I still hate the word Mandoverse, but Mandoverse shows.
Okay, Hattie and Ezra, they have a little set. I thought that when she gave him a little haircut, that cracked me up. That was perfect.
He's like, come on, man.
He's like,
I spent
so long
growing this out.
I know, 10 years, right? I haven't had a good trim in so long. That's the first thing you do is you cut my hair. Well, she was aiming for his head and like missed because, he's got so much hair. And then when Ezra's bending her lightsaber.
That was very cool.
Whoa, that was wild.
He's like, I've been practicing. You don't even know.
Yeah. His fighting style, even though he's really strong, she still knocked him for hard one and like damn near knocked him out. So she's not underpowered. Is she like at the same level as Ezra?
I don't know. I mean, you can still get knocked back even if you can punch, right? Like that's I don't know if there's anything we can take from that as far as power levels. I think that because what is he going to do? Push back? This is going to push her away.
Right. We were talking about this again on the Discord today about this idea of is this the first time that we're seeing an unarmed fighting style that uses the Force?
Well, Ahsoka, but that's in a book and in a Tales of the Jedi episode.
Right. So
in animation,
this is a really cool thing that they're opening up. And then Ahsoka uses some unarmed combat style on Hattie when she shows up as well. So I like this. A lot of people were excited by this idea that we're opening up the space for, and again, as we were talking about before, different kinds of Force users. And it doesn't have to be Jedi Knight stuff, right? It can be like a more martial arts style.
Yeah, I like that we're getting more variety in combat styles for sure.
All right. Well, I think that's about it. I mean, other than Ahsoka offering to help Hattie and she like ran away.
Yeah, she's like, no.
No.
Because I don't think she trusts anybody. Clearly, she ended up with Baylan because she was in a vulnerable position and he gave her a way out.
And he saw a potential in her.
Right. So she only trusts the person who brought her up, and now even he's betrayed her, so he's abandoned her. So what is she going to do now? Who does she trust? She doesn't
trust
anybody.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's a really good point.
She's the wild card now, not just Ahsoka. Maybe here's what I'm betting for the season finale. Shin is going to be the one that messes up Thrawn's plan. Not Ahsoka, not Ezra, not Sabine.
Interesting.
I think Baylan has fucked off and he's not doing anything more with Thrawn. I don't think he cares what Thrawn does.
No,
I don't
know. Doesn't.
Take over the galaxy. Don't take over the galaxy. Whatever you want, man.
I'm going to break the wheel. Right.
Right.
Last little comment. Thrawn, what a rare sight. Just like the Jedi of old.
Yeah. He's a collector. Well, we know he was a collector. He had like that office of trinkets back Rebels. He's collecting experiences now.
All right, that's the episode, the penultimate. Sure is. We have one more to go. I don't mind, you know, make the show with streaming. One of the things that we get is we're not tied to the advertising structure, not only in number of episodes, but in the way that an episode plays out, right? So this was about a 37-minute episode.
Mm-hmm.
They would have stretched that out to an hour, you know, with ads and everything, you know, in the old days. So, you know, take your time to and put in the number of episodes that work for your story. But I almost feel like a lot of what we're getting in the television Star Wars ones are 6 and 8 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
give me 12. Or, you know, Andor went farther, but that's Tony Gilroy.
Andor went to 12, yeah.
Yeah, that's a different thing, right? But I'm like, in Obi-Wan, Book of Boba, Mando, this.
Don't give me more Book of Boba.
No. That's but I'm okay. saying, I'm talking about, you know, total number of episodes in a season, you know, or give me the seasons faster or something. I don't know. I just feel like I'm getting a little shortchanged. I want a little bit more breathing room, you know?
Then again, sometimes I'm watching a Wheel of Time episode that's an hour long, and I'm like, okay, this needs to get to the point.
Right.
At a certain point, because I think that, you know, there's a balance, right? Especially with density of material. I think this stuff I could watch for an hour, and it doesn't faze me because it's less dense. Wheel of Time, Rings of Power, I think you need to... I think that would do better as a longer episode, longer number of episodes,
right,
and a shorter
episode per time per episode. Whereas what I would love is I don't know, 9-10 episodes in this. I don't know, you know, at 37 minutes, whatever, that's fine. But I just feel like, oh, you know, the season's over before we even started. So
let's put this on the Christmas second breakfast when we evaluate the year.
Talking about episode time, run times, and episode numbers.
Yeah.
That's cool. All right. Well, let's get into some feedback.
Sounds good. I see your spouse wrote it.
Yes. She told
me. Probably spoken.
We were talking about it after the last episode, and she ended up going down. This was after episode 6. She went down a little rabbit hole one day, and she was reading about how Hayden Christensen and Rosario Dawson are in real life friends who knew each other from an acting class that they took together.
Yeah. And I saw that the other day too. Yeah.
That's fun. I didn't realize that. I don't know a lot of the details, but my wife, she was like, oh, that's so cool. Like, this is really super interesting. Like, they're really good friends. They're not just set friends, you know, they're really, really appreciate each other. So I thought that was really a lovely touch to an extra little bit of something on the episode.
Nice. Yeah.
And then I guess also Mary Elizabeth Winstead is married to Ewan McGregor.
I didn't know that. So
that,
good for both of them.
That's what she found out. So we've got a Star Wars family literally going on here. So
how long until their like baby child plays Yoda or something like that?
Hey, we haven't seen Jason in a couple episodes.
I haven't even thought about Jason.
Why wasn't Jason at the court martial trial?
Jason is my anti-Roman Empire.
Right.
I thought about Jason negative times since the last episode.
I thought she brings him everywhere. Why isn't
he just has
there
to go to the space battle.
Sitting with Chopper, you know, listening to Senator Ziono give her up and down the other.
You can come with me and risk your life, son, but you can't watch me get embarrassed.
Right. You can't watch me almost lose my generalship.
Yep.
All right. Marilyn R. Pukila, our favorite Tolkien scholar and co-host on many a show on the Lorehounds here, she writes in. Says, hello, John and David. I found this episode fascinating and was glad to start delving more deeply into some of the characters about which I knew very little. The Night Sisters are very interesting. They call them witches and they use magic with a K. And there are three of them, but there the similarities pretty much end as far as our stories and tales about witchcraft go. But more on that later. So did you think of Ahsoka and Sabine when Sabine yells at Becky Haller, go away, you betrayed me. Talk about projection. There's all sorts of abandonment and betrayal issues floating around in this particular show. Jedi or no, I have a feeling that Sabine will end up in the quote unquote world between worlds herself at some point, or else a similar sort of circumstance that will bring her to confront the things that have yet to be healed in her, chiefly abandonment. Imagine Sabine confronted by Anakin. I would also say that Sabine has some splaining to do with Ezra, hence her, please just let me be happy to have found you for a while request.
Can I pause here?
Absolutely.
I want to say,
yes.
What about Sabine being confronted by Kanan in the world between worlds?
That would be really good.
I think that would work better than Anakin for her.
Right. We don't know who Kanan is in the live action, but yeah.
Right.
Fair
well,
enough.
And also, Freddie Prinze Jr. has said some disparaging things about Star Wars since. And
oh, is, he, and is that the voice actor?
Voice actor.
Okay.
Yeah. And right. So people aren't super happy with Freddie Prinze Jr.
Really?
But, interesting. Yeah.
All right. Anyway, she continues, and I wondered about Sabine just heading out into the wilderness, riding a completely unknown beast into territory which she knows nothing about. Where is the safe food, the safe water, the safe shelter? Definitely a jammies and cereal moment for me. This is a cereal-based show, I think. There are certainly some points where you just gotta grin and enjoy it, right?
And it was the same thing in 77, guys. You know, I was talking about this the other day. There are so many people with, and I think you're included, David, with nostalgia glasses for 77 and Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi.
If we gave it as much rigor as we do some of these other shows, would it
hold you up? Tear it apart. The dialogue is horseshit for both the first and the third movie. Uh-huh. The second movie has some better dialogue, but even then you have some cringe stuff. I was just watching Empire Strikes Back a little bit the other day. And the whole interaction in the hallway where Han's like, well, you're not even saying what you mean about me. It's like so high school and just exhausting. And boy, I love those movies, but they in a lot of ways don't age well.
Sure. There's some dated gender norm issues there for sure. Yep. Han was not a great guy in a lot of ways, I think, you know.
So I'm happy to have people use the sound effects and vibe and the settings of these movies to make better stories.
Fair enough. Fair enough. All right. Marilyn continues. Magic with a K goes way back to Aleister Crowley, who was around from about 1875
Mr. Crowley.
To 1947, an early ceremonial practitioner and all-around bad boy. He coined phrases such as harm none and do what you will, as well as love is the law, love under will, but interpreted them rather well, generously, let us say. He spelled magic that way too, with a K, to distinguish it from I can never say this.
Prestidigitation.
Word. Thank you very much. In D&D, I could never say it. I make a little smoke blurry thing happen. i.e. stage magic, shades of Mrs. Davis. Oh, she's pulling in a Mrs. Davis.
There ball. You go.
Contemporary Wiccans, Witchens, and other pagans. Say that three times fast. Contemporary Wiccans, witches, and other pagans sometimes use this spelling to describe their craft. John, do you know much about magic?
Sure, I've read some. I've read up on some of these things. I mean, Crowley was super influential. He was. I don't think he was the one who founded Wicca particularly, but he founded like so many occult practices. I guess I should say he popularized them. He popularized the revival of pagan practices from, you know, ancient European practices.
And kind of brought it into a post-Renaissance thing. Like, we're discovering the mysteries of the world.
Right.
Now let me empty your checkbook.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I think that
a lot of people around him were. I don't know about Crowley.
Sure,
a lot of
sure.
People
I think it. I think he was perhaps more genuine than that. But I think that he, the best thing you could say about him is he gave people permission to be themselves in these traditions. Right.
Oh, that's very generous of you.
Sure. Yeah, I'm feeling generous
tonight. Okay. Very good. Marilyn continues. Funny you should have mentioned triple blessings, which is a reference to our foundation coverage. We also have here the echoes of a triple goddess figure with the three mothers, echoes of Matris and Matrone. Oh, God, I'm butchering that. The Greco-Germanic societies from the 5th century CE. Though usually the Wiccan practice, which focuses more on magic, generally deals with the goddess and the horned god. Sort of closer to the father, the daughter, and the son, although there's no mother involved in that trio. Right. So the father, daughter, and son are mythology in Star Wars, right?
Yes, they are the force embodied.
Right.
And they are real. We have confirmation in canon that they are real beings that Anakin and Obi-Wan and Ahsoka met.
Got it. She continues, another way they echo our own planetary concept of witches is they're employing that ancient formula of women plus power equals evil. Really an interesting mixture of invention with contemporary images and practices from our own planet. I'll be fascinated to see where they go with it. Interesting, too, because we've been paused, but we've been talking and we've been reading and then talking about the Earthsea trilogy by Ursula K. Le Guin. which the first three books primarily involve a male protagonist, even though the second book has a female protagonist as well, who then, yeah, so the fourth book then pivots on that and then goes into the questions of female power. Mm-hmm. So it's it'll be interesting to I'm interested to read more about it to sort of compare it to what we've got going on here with the Night Sisters.
Yes, me too. I've done my reading for the first episode and I'm enjoying it more than I did the first three books. So
wow,
I'm excited to talk about it quite a lot more, honestly. Like, this is the first one that makes me go, I need to go back and read this now.
Huh. Okay.
Page turner.
Wow. Anyway, we're going to save it for that pod. So I need to catch up on my reading and get to this place where it really starts to take off, because I do love the first three books dearly. And the fourth one was always, so anyway. But that is another podcast entirely. So if you're into the Earthsea stuff, go check out our past coverage, and we'll should have a podcast out in October covering the first six chapters of Tehanu. All right. Marilyn continues with her email. I understand Nati to be the planetary language, like Naboo. We have here two different culture species appearing to speak the same language in the same geographic area. So while the baby Ninja Turtles and the Bandits appear to be different creatures, they're still both Nati and speak Nati. I don't know if we have confirmation of that.
I think the Bandits. Well, I think she wrote this after last episode, right?
Yeah, exactly.
This is episode six. Think this episode kind of settled that debate.
Yeah. So lastly, in touching on that famous quiz question we knew from the original Star Wars film, that Owen ran a moisture evaporator farm. So this was, who is it who wrote in on this one?
I want to say Eric F.
Okay, yes, it was Eric F.
I see it in the next thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, look at that. Eric F. is in our queue here. So this was a thing about Eric F. Wrote in about in previous Facebook feedback. Because he needed C-3PO to understand and speak the language of moisture evaporators, similar to binary lift loaders, I understand. I don't know what else you can farm with such devices other than water. I think that's how we must have known in 77. You know, yeah, because Owen does say binary moisture evaporators. Mm-hmm. So,
all right. Well, she settled that debate as well.
Thank you, Marilyn. We will be very interested to see what you think this. I know you had some comments in the Discord, especially around Ahsoka and sort of her healing around Anakin and mm-hmm. Anakin Vader stuff. So yeah, good stuff there. Okay, Eric F., Lore Master. Speak of the Lore Master and he shall appear. Hey guys, once again, Filoni has outdone himself. Each episode keeps getting better and better. At this rate, I'm subconsciously bracing for a letdown that I pray doesn't happen.
Oh, don't do that to yourself, Eric.
Get a bowl, get some cereal. Put on some jammies. You'll be all right.
You know, the series has already told you what comes next. A New Hope. All right, I'm done.
God. You even looked off into the distance on your screen when you said it. That was very good. Are you attending the Ray Stevenson School of Acting?
if I were so privileged.
As you thought, that was indeed Thrawn's theme from the Rebels, right? We were talking last episode, was that the organ music was that Thrawn's theme. And yep, so confirmed it's from Rebels and doesn't quite match up note for note, but is almost identical. Okay, very cool. He continues, a couple of things that I found interesting. First was the name of Thrawn's captain, Enoch. He shares this name with a man in the Bible who is believed to have defied death, right? John, you had covered a bunch of this last time. The Bible says that Enoch was no more, for God took him. Many theologians have interpreted this to mean that Enoch did not die, but in fact was alive and walking with God in heaven. He literally defied death. Also, Enoch's mask was very different from the other troopers. His strongly resembles a golden funeral mask, which was placed on the faces of dead soldiers to preserve their identities. In fact, all of the trooper armor bears resemblances to ancient Roman armor, with it being repaired by infusing broken pieces with gold. So we talked about this with the Japanese practice of a similar thing. Something that the Roman legions took from the ancient Japanese. You would think we would read these ahead of time, but we don't. I usually just cut and paste them into the document and move on. So
you got to get our hot takes in.
That's right. I would equate them. Yeah, we want to be fresh when we read these, right?
Yeah.
I would equate them possibly to the Lost Roman Legion, a legion of troops from Rome who disappeared in England around 120 AD and were never seen again. To this day, nobody knows for certain what happened to them. Sound familiar? Like Thrawn squads? John, there's a lot in there. Anything about Aenoch you want to throw in additionally?
Pretty much touched on all the things I said last time. Yep. Okay. I think that there's something there for sure. I hope we actually get to see the face of Aenoch at some point.
Right, yes. Because what's his name?
What's his name again? Wes Chatham.
Wes Chatham.
Wes Chatham.
Yes.
And so I hope we get to see Wes. I met Wes. Did I ever tell you that?
Oh, no.
I met him at Dragon Con.
Oh, okay.
I went to Dragon Con in Atlanta, and he... And I think Stephen Strait is the Holden.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. They both signed my book.
Oh, very nice. Yeah. Cool. I heard they're nice guys. So
they were very nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
They talked to me about the production of the show, actually.
Oh, cool.
They told me about all the lenses they're going to use in season 4 because that was a new season. Anyway.
And you nodded and smiled and said thank you very much for the signature. And,
yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
I like this Lost Roman Legion poll. That's very cool. Yeah. We'll see where that goes. It does have a very... Lost Legion vibe to it, trapped out in another galaxy.
Yeah.
Continues, finally, what if this series is all set up for the next movie or movies? ? Yeah, I think that's pretty clear now. That's where we're pointed at. What I mean is, I don't think that we've seen the last of the World Between Worlds. In Rebels, a Sith Master, don't recall the name, referred to it as the link to the past, present, and future. This was demonstrated when Ezra heard voices from the past, Yoda, Obi-Wan, Qui-Gon, Anakin, present, Ahsoka, Kanan, Jarrus, Chirrut, Imwe, and Jyn Erso, and future, Leia, Rey, Maz Kanata, Kylo Ren, Poe. There could be more, but that's what I caught when I rewatched the episode. Interesting. I didn't catch all of that. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, me either. That's cool. That's cool, and that makes sense.
Okay. Well, yeah. I mean, we definitely know that Filoni's pulling threads in a particular direction. He's really the...
Filoni baloney all day.
He's the showrunner, right? Right now. He's the Star Wars showrunner. So, okay. As always, thanks for the hard work and dedication. Lore Master Eric F., thank you for your dedication and support for this podcast.
I always love the feedback.
Yes. And I always love feedback from a Lore Master.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Last up, we got Chris D, who used the contact form on our website. It says, hey, guys, your conversation on the name of Aenoch and the significance of the name made me think. The Book of Ezra, all about the return of Jewish exiles back to Jerusalem years after they'd been conquered by the Babylonians and their temple destroyed. Mm-hmm. Ezra is a priest who is involved in the return to Jerusalem and oversees the rebuilding of the temple and formal reestablishment of the Jewish faith and temple hierarchy. What if our Ezra is meant to come back from exile and rebuild the temple, as it were? Good pull, Chris. Yeah. This is a good email. I like this.
That is a good question. I wonder. See, my only hesitation of going with this theory is that I don't think that Dave Filoni could have known that he would get this far in the story at the beginning. Like, I don't think this part of the story was planned.
Okay.
At the beginning of Rebels when they would have named him. I think that more likely is that he was the guy who brought back the good guys to Lothal. You know, he was the savior of Lothal in the end.
Uh-huh.
You know, and that happened in the finale of Rebels. And he... restored, you know, the governorship that was not imperial. He restored Ryder to the governor. I think that's probably more likely the original intent, but I really like this application, so I'm going to say this is canon now.
Very good. You've been canonized, Chris D., sanctified by St. John of the Lorehound. I think it's a really interesting poll. And this is what I love. We just did our season wrap up for the Foundation series on Apple TV. And we had our friend Anthony, who is a academic, and of course Marilyn, who's our favorite Tolkien scholar and academic as well. And they're pulling Hittites and Sumerians and Norse thunder gods out of this stuff. I mean, where else do you get great polls like this except for on the Lorehounds pod? I love it. It fits right in.
There you have it, David.
You do. And there you have it for our coverage for this episode. One more to go.
Mm-hmm. So one way out.
Yes. Don't make me cry. Reminder that you can send feedback to StarWars@thelorehounds.com. Head over to our website. There's a contact form and voicemail feature there. And you can always throw stuff on the Discord, which has been hopping. Lots of good conversation happening over there. Links for all of that stuff are in the show notes.
It's more crowded than the asteroid field.
Ooh, that's a good one. Debris field. I like that. That works.
There you go.
Boy, we are just coming out of our triple coverage of Ahsoka, of Wheel of Time, and Foundation.
Yep.
And Wheel of Time and Foundation, sorry, Wheel of Time and Ahsoka are like ending next week together.
I know.
So it's going to be...
We're going to breathe again.
Yes, exactly. And then we have a lot of stuff to catch up on. So we're going to... Do we have some ideas for what we're doing in October?
Definitely going to do a Silmarillion stories.
Okay.
Definitely going to do Second Breakfast, of course.
Yeah.
I know where I'm planning a one piece, one shot with Moses.
Good.
You are planning to do something about the creator.
I think. The movie, the creator, Alicia and John, John and I were talking about getting something done for that. Lots of good reviews on it.
Mm-hmm. And we're probably going to do something collaborative with Alicia on the new Mike Flanagan.
Yep.
Show the Fall of the House of Usher.
Yep.
So that should be good.
Yep.
And then you're doing Loki. So you have that every week.
Yes. Yes, we do. We're fingers crossed. It's looking, we're hopeful. We are hopeful after the debacle that was.
I wish you all the best.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Are you guys going to get a Lorehounds play in, do you think?
Yes, actually, I didn't mention that, but we are going to be doing that for October. We're going to do Skyrim.
Okay, fine.
And I think we'll probably compare initial notes on Starfield as well.
Okay.
Because
Starfield
I've played some of it. Mm-hmm. I think Brandon probably has played some of it too by now. And if not, maybe he will by then.
We have a channel too on our Discord for just game conversation stuff on, called the Lorehounds Play. And who is it? There's several people in there talking about Starfield. And they're having a good time with it.
Hey, did you ever get Baldur's Gate 3 working?
I did not, but I didn't try again. I hit that first wall of the loading screen, not getting past the loading screen on the Mac.
Mm-hmm.
And you had sent me something and I was like, no way. It was like 9:30 at night. No way I'm doing
that. I just sent it to you because I came across it. But so we were mulling over maybe live streaming. If you can get it to work and you like
I'm sure I will.
Live streaming, you, me, and Brandon, and maybe a fourth party doing the campaign as a D&D group.
Yeah, that'd be fun. That would be definitely
taking
fun.
Audience suggestions for for the choices and whatnot, the dialogue options, the roles.
Yeah, I have to see how this plays because I have no idea how they get the D&D around the table rolling dice feeling into a video game. That seems like an incredible
You click on the dice and it rolls. It's great. They do the check and then they add your modifiers for you right underneath.
Which has always been the promise of a virtual tabletops.
Right.
And it's always, I get so exhausted trying to set up virtual tabletops. It's exhausting.
No, it actually works though. It does it automatically.
Very good. So over on our other affiliate podcast, Properly Howard Movie Review, Anthony and Steve, the theologian and stand-up comic, walk into a podcasting studio and they talk about movies. And the theme of their season right now is remakes. And we just had, what do we have? We just had The Wicker Man.
Just had The Wicker Man, I believe. They already did The Departed, so I think Cape Fear is next.
Yeah, I think that's
coming. I don't know. Subscribe to the feed. There'll be something funny on there.
They did RoboCop. These are all different versions of remakes, and it's a lot of fun. It's a really interesting conversation. A lot of pop culture nonsense and silliness. And the real trick is you don't have to have seen the movie or even like the movie to enjoy the podcast.
It's almost more fun when you don't watch the movie because you hear this terrible retelling of it in a comedic nature. It's exactly. Really fun.
It is.
It's really fun.
It really does work without having seen it. So
I haven't seen most of these movies and I've listened to most of these podcasts and I'm having a great time.
So Alicia on the Wool Shift Dust feed had to do some recalibrating. There was some IRL stuff going on as well. They moved the Dune movie to 2024. So that threw her schedule off because she's doing a big 360 on Dune, the making of Dune, the culture of Dune, the video games of Dune, all that kind of stuff.
And there's just not enough Dune to fill up until then.
There really is not, John. I'm telling you, there is not. I mean, the Wheel of Time, fine. However many millions of words it has. So
I know.
But she's got stuff going on. She's got a few projects in the pipeline and she will be announcing things there soon. Definitely going to do something with Fall of House of Usher. And some other stuff. So just stay tuned to her podcast, to her feed, Wool Shift Dust, for news and updates. And we'll be sure to update you here.
Very cool.
John.
David.
Since the last time we have recorded,
mm-hmm.
we have added two new lore masters.
I know, just today. Just today, the day we're recording.
Incredible.
It was very exciting. And it was people who regularly contribute to Discord, and it's nice to see a familiar name on the lore master list.
That green looks good on their names, right?
I know, you were saying. Yeah. You were saying.
So, would you do us the honor of reading these 32 names?
Of course. All right, I'm done. Samartian, Cyrus, Mark H., Michael G., Michelle E., David W., Brian P., Nick W., SC, Peter OH, Bettina W., Adam S., Nancy M., Lavinia T., Duve 71, Brian 8063, Frederick H., Sarah L., Garrett C., Eric F., Matthew M., Sarah M., DJ Miwa, Andra B., Kwang Yu, Laura G., Deadeye Jedi Bob, Nathan T., Alex V., Aaron T., or End. I don't know why I'm saying or. End, Sub-Zero. Well, and, thank you all so
and,
much.
And wait. There's a 32. Are you looking at the right document here?
Oh, Adrian. Yes. Oh, my God. I totally skipped over Adrian. How could I?
He
could
upgraded.
Adrian's always in the Discord and having a great conversation with us. So thanks, Adrian and Sub-Zero, for being our two newest lore masters.
Yeah, they've been around for a while and just decided to jump in, and we really appreciate that. Thank you. Two notes, too. Three notes. One, if we're reading your name on this lore master thing and you want to go by your nickname or your screen name, just let us know and we'll happy to change that, or vice versa. You know, just let us know how you want us to address you. So yeah, so there's two cool features that Patreon makes available. One is the 7-day free trial. So if you want to just check us out, you can do that. And the other thing is that you can convert your membership to an annual membership anytime. So if that works better for your budget, makes more
gives
sense.
Gives you a little discount.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Anytime. So, all right, John. Well, thanks very much. I am excited for episode 8.
Same here.
And I guess we'll see you on the Wheel of Time podcast.
See you then.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds and connect with us on Twitter at @thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.
Hey, Mark, I was listening to Paramore the other day, and it really made me think about the amygdala and the limbic system.
You just made those words up, didn't you?
What, Paramore?
We're the Nevermind the Music podcast, where one musician
and one psychologist
talk songwriting and the mind, one song at a time.
We'll hear everything from Green Day and Outkast
to Stevie Wonder and Dua Lipa.
And we mostly try to stay on topic.
Except for when we don't want to.
Nevermind the Music, wherever you get your podcasts.
Plan on flying? It's time to upgrade to a Real ID. Because in order to board domestic flights, your driver's license or state-issued ID must be a Real ID, or you'll need another acceptable form of identification. So don't wait. Find out how to get your Real ID at tsa.gov/Real ID. That's tsa.gov/Real ID. Or visit your local DMV. And then you'll be cleared for takeoff.